Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
This is Somewhere in the Skies with Ryan Spread.
Welcome, everybody, to Somewhere in the Skies. I'm your host, Ryan Sprague. And today, we're going to be talking to two very important people who are starring on a brand new television series that is premiering on the History Channel on December 12th. And that is History's Greatest Mysteries, narrated by Lawrence Fishburne. And within the context of this series, there's going to be a few mini-series. And one of those is about a case near and dear to my heart, as I know it is many of yours as well. And that is Roswell. And it is Roswell First Witness. And with me today is the lead investigator of the show, Ben Smith, who is a former CIA operative, which we will definitely touch on, and also the granddaughter of the first military witness to step foot on the Roswell crash site. And that is Denise Marcel. So guys, welcome to Somewhere in the Skies. Thanks so much for being here.
Hi, thank you for having us.
Yeah, this is a trip. Thank you, Ryan. This is great.
My pleasure. Like I mentioned, this case means so much to so many people out there. It's kind of their gateway drug into the UFO world. And I know it was for me as well. The first book I ever read on UFOs was by nuclear physicist Stanton Friedman, who wrote Crash at Corona. So, you know, not only were UFOs supposedly visiting our planet from somewhere else, but they were crashing, and that terrified me as a 12-year-old. So it's been a tailspin for me since there. But I'm sure this has been a crazy experience for the both of you as well. So I kind of just want to dive into the show and your investigation, Ben, what you guys uncovered. We won't give away too much, obviously. But Ben, for my audience, you know, I don't think they've really ever seen you before or heard from you unless you've been tapping their phones in your previous life and everything. But I'm just kidding, brother. I'm just kidding. But can you tell us a little about yourself, you know, the work you did with the CIA? And yeah, what led you to want to investigate the Roswell case of all things?
Yeah, it's a long story. I'll try to keep it short. But my name is Ben Smith. I'm from the Pacific Northwest. I joined the CIA out of graduate school to, serve my country, to learn about the intelligence process, do my best to prevent terrorist attacks and, foreign espionage against our country. I was what's called a case officer for a number of years. A case officer in Hollywood parlance is the undercover field operative. So I largely worked overseas recruiting and handling sources. We call them agents or assets to collect intelligence that might be useful to the U.S. government, in preventing terrorist attacks or thwarting espionage against our businesses and governments or weapons of mass destruction, right? A global danger. So I really cut my teeth in the field dealing with a lot of individuals claiming they had access to pretty fantastic information. You know, it could be somebody approaching me and saying, hey, I know where some radioactive material is. Hey, I know there's a terrorist attack coming. You need to listen to me. And sifting through all of these kinds of people, right, who sometimes want to help and sometimes want to hurt me or others, and getting to the bone, you know, is this really true and is it useful and can we do something about it? So I really cut my teeth doing that kind of work for the CIA. I resigned from the CIA a couple of years ago to just pursue other interests. One, my wife, now wife, and two, to really explore really what else is out there and to ponder those big questions. And one of the first things I turned my eye to was, okay, UFOs, what's this about? Why do people all around the world have these experiences? And is there really any there? know, I'd grown up in, this is already too long. Sorry. I'd grown up in the 90s when awesome fiction like The X-Files and some of the programming on Unsolved Mysteries kind of captured my imagination, and it took off from there. And it's still a passion of mine to figure out, like, what is happening? Is this a real national security? Is this a real national security threat and global security threat that we need to be serious about?
And we know, recently, within the past few years, that the Pentagon has looked at that potential threat of what UFOs, or what they're now coining UAPs, unidentified aerial phenomena, what they might be, and could they pose a potential threat? And, I mean, talk about a threat when something crashed in the desert in 1947 that a lot of people, including your grandfather, Denise, couldn't figure out what it was. And this guy was a trained observer. He knew what to look for in the skies. It was his job. So let's kind of get your background, Denise. I mean, I'm sure some people recognize you from the show that I was a part of in looking at Roswell. But yeah, could you tell us a little about your connection to all of this? Even though I kind of spoiled the big part, you are the granddaughter. But yeah, surprise everyone. But yeah, tell us a little about yourself.
Well, like you said, my grandfather was Jesse Marcel Sr. He was a lieutenant colonel when he retired. And he was the first military officer at a crash site in Roswell, New Mexico in 1947. And he found that the material was just so intriguing, and it just didn't make any sense to him, that on his way back to the base, he decided to show the material to my grandfather and, or excuse me, to my father and to my grandmother. And he did say these words to them. He goes, "I think what we have here are pieces of a flying saucer." And he believed that until the day he passed away, that what they found out there in the desert was a flying saucer. Just because the material just didn't make any sense to him.
Right. And I mean, the story kind of just unraveled from there. We know about the famous headline that came out in the newspaper, you know, RAAF finds flying disc in desert, or something along those lines. I know I have it actually right here on my mug. I should probably show that to everyone here.
That's wonderful.
Just, I'm no poser, I promise. This case means a lot to me. But let's talk a little about the investigation, Ben, that you guys did. And it kind of starts with the first episode of the show, which I am very thankful to have screened recently. You talk about the journal. And this is something some of us have speculated and maybe rumored throughout the years, that there could be this written account or something to do with this in the journals of Jesse Marcel. And lo and behold, boom, we won't give away too much. But yeah, tell us a little about what this journal meant to both of you, Ben as an investigator and Denise as something tangible and first person from your grandfather. I guess, Ben, let's start with you, if you don't mind.
Yeah, I mean, in the intelligence business, the first thing you want is, the best thing you can get is firsthand documentation, right? Whether that's the secret plans of the enemy or the terrorist group or what have you. And here I had a chance to get my hands on a firsthand document belonging to a military member, or in the possession of a military member, who was the key witness, the first witness, government witness on the scene in Roswell in 1947. So there's a lot of importance there. You know, when I got a chance to open that book, it really fascinated me. You know, I'm someone who has used subterfuge and, you know, who's used clever techniques to hide sensitive information to carry out my own operations. But here I have a book, and as soon as I crack it open, I can see already that there's a lot of room, and it follows a lot of the procedures that I've been trained to use in terms of hiding information potentially. So that immediately caught my eye, and that became the foundation of my investigation. Can I authenticate the provenance of this document? Is it real, legitimate, and what does it tell us? So that kind of was the basis for the investigation, and really expanded from there. And fortunately, I got to work with Denise all along the way.
Right. And I mean, the examination and analysis done on the journal is something we won't get into. You have to see it. But it packed a punch. I mean, you guys went straight to the top with people to analyze the handwriting and to possibly decode some stuff that could be a little more mysterious side within the contents of the journal. But Denise, what was it like looking at this and hearing about it as Ben was also investigating it? I mean, this came straight from your grandfather.
Well, you know, the journal is it's very intriguing. I guess that's the best word to describe it, because what's written in there sort of just doesn't make sense. So with having Ben look at it from a different perspective, of a CIA background, it lends to, I think it makes it even a little bit more mysterious, because it just, some of it just doesn't make sense. And maybe it was meant to be cryptic and that we weren't supposed to understand what it was saying, because it's there's just some odd stuff in it. I don't know how else to describe it. I'm just really happy that we have somebody taking a different look at it, you know, other than our family, and having somebody from the CIA actually who has a knowledgeable background about looking at analyzing something that's kind of cryptic.
Right. And we,
then what we, you know, it looks like regular, like little poems or something like that. But then it's like, what, why was he writing this? It kind of doesn't make sense.
Right. And this was from a standard, you know, provided journal that the military gave to him. So, I mean, that lends a lot of credence, too. And we'll leave the audience to figure out and try to decode some of that stuff, as Ben tried to do as well. But I want to move to kind of the core of this investigation, which I have done personally. So many UFO researchers out there, like Stanton Friedman or Don Schmidt, who is featured in your show as well, have gone out to the debris site. Now, that's a whole story of its own. There's so many proposed crash sites that people have claimed to go to out there and whatnot. But I mean, Ben, when you were out there, man, it looked very, very similar as a vast desert can look to me as the actual place, which was awesome. So I'd love to hear, what was it like, man, for you stepping foot on what could possibly be where a UFO, no matter what that UFO was or wasn't, where it possibly crashed and was subsequently covered up, which we'll get to. But what was that experience like going out to the site? And what'd you guys do out there? I got to ask, what kind of tools did you bring? This is a very high-tech investigation, which we're not used to, which is really exciting. So yeah, give us some teases on that, if you don't mind.
Oh man, it was a thrill to be out there. I'd never been to New Mexico before. It was my first time, especially to the debris field. You know, I'd read about it. I'd read many of the works that you cited by Stanton Friedman and Don Schmidt and Kevin Randall and all the other great researchers who put a lot of work into piecing to this puzzle together. But being out there for the first time was pretty incredible. You know, whether or not a UFO crashed here or not, it really is the genesis of ufology in the United States and a global culture for UFOs and government conspiracy. And so you have to give it that space, that kind of reverence. It's beautiful. It's desolate. You have to put yourself in the shoes of someone like Jesse Marcel or Mac Brazel to be out on that field and really be alone with this strange debris, and it really takes you there and kind of haunts you in a way. But yeah, we tried to give this a really thorough investigation with all the resources. We didn't want to just turn over new leaves and say, oh, this is a potential new lead and not take it, right? We need to follow every lead and chase it into the ground and then see what shakes out of it. What evidence can we present? What can we find? We wanted to change the conversation, and so we brought every tool. I can't give away too much about what kinds of tools, but we brought every tool that we could to the debris field to see if we could find A, any potential debris, B, evidence of a cover-up, and C, evidence of a large-scale cleanup. So, you know, over time, even after 70 years, with the right technology, you can tease out some of those details. So that was our goal in bringing out some of the heavy-duty equipment and, unprecedented technology to the
debris field. Right. And again, that's what I found so refreshing about this. You know, when I did a televised investigation as well, you're always hesitant with these things. And Denise, I mean, you've seen and heard it all. If you can't bring something new to the Roswell case, what's the point? And so, you know, we did our best to bring new stuff to the table, as you guys did as well. And I think that's amazing that after 70 plus years, we can still look at this case with fresh eyes and hopefully someday get an answer that I know, Denise, you have wanted, your father wanted, your grandfather wanted. So it's awesome. I think it's so cool that people are still willing to look into this case and uncover things as they happen. And you did bring up the word cover up, and I would love to touch on that with both of you. I mean, Ben, you know, after looking at this thing, like, there clearly was a cover up of some sort. And I'd like to get your observations on that. But Denise, first, what was it like, you know, with your grandfather and your father also having touched this debris at one point, the cover-up and what the military did to your father, or excuse me, what the military did to your grandfather in all this, from a personal standpoint?
You know, this show has been a real journey for me. It's gotten me in touch with some of my relatives a lot closer than I was previously, that actually knew my grandfather. Their family knew my grandfather, and he had talked to them about what he experienced and everything. And from a personal point of view, I just feel like in some respects, the government really let down my grandfather. I mean, he was made to be the fall guy. And I think it was more of a burden on him than what I realized. I think it affected him, and I know it affected my grandmother too quite a bit. I don't know if redemption is the right word for it, but it's just, you know, when you have people calling you names and saying that you're crazy and that you don't know what you're talking about, when he knew exactly what he was talking about. And he knew that he was telling the truth. It's hard to live with that. And I just want somehow for my grandfather's name to be really cleared of this, because I believe what he found out there was something that wasn't from here. And I think it's time for our government to come out and tell us what exactly did happen out there.
What's up, guys? Ryan Sprague here, and I'm just dropping in to remind you about our Patreon campaign. Somewhere in the Skies is always free to consume, but it's not free to create. So if you want to help the show on a monthly basis, we have tons of rewards for you in return, including shoutouts on the show and website, bonus content and episodes, and free merch. Want to be my guest or pick a topic for the show? You can do that too. So if you'd like to learn more and to help support the show, visit patreon.com/somewhereskies. Thank you, and keep looking up.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Now, Ben, what does that mean to someone like you in the intelligence world when it comes to to this, covering things up. I mean, there are those out there who argue, yeah, there was probably a really good reason for this to be covered up, and others who say, no, we deserve to know the truth, and it would be vindication for someone like Jesse Marcel, who knew full well this was not a weather balloon, as it's been quoted. So for you, what would a cover-up of this level, why do you personally think the government would do this when it comes to the Roswell crash?
It's important to keep in mind that this is the center of national security in the entire country in 1947. All the most important secrets, all the most important technological developments of the, you know, the World War II and the immediate aftermath happened here in New Mexico. So anything that happens here is going to cause reverberations across the U.S. government. Now, intelligence services around the world have flimsy and sometimes damaging cover stories to cover their operational requirements or missions, or when disaster happens, to sweep things under the rug. I myself have used cover stories in the field, and they're very effective at protecting national security sources and methods. And so I don't have a bone to pick with the government for covering up whatever crashed out there, because obviously it was important, whether we go with the Mogul explanation that this was an aerial listening device for Soviet atomic testing, or whether it's an alien spacecraft or some other experimental craft, there's a good reason to have a cover story, but that comes at a cost. And here it came at, you know, Jesse Marcel's immediate health and the health of his family members and his grandchildren as well are still dealing with the outs or the cost of this cover up. Why the government decided to lead with, if it's not real, if it's not a UFO crash, why would the government decide to lead with an alien? A UFO crash cover story. That to me sounds explosive, counterproductive, because it would draw more attention to whatever crashed out there. So there's some lingering questions. If that was your go-to response, it wasn't a very good one, and it certainly wasn't effective, because here 7 years later, we're still dealing with the aftermath. To my mind, the government still hasn't convincingly come out with a credible explanation of what really crashed there. So there are a lot of questions. Now, I come at this as a neutral ufologist. I haven't had any close encounters of my own. I have spent a lot of time working or talking to individuals who have, but I think it's definitely a possibility. And as long as it's a possibility, we need to take it seriously. So that's the lens that I view this at. I haven't arrived to any decisive conclusion yet about what happens there, but I know that there are still lies being told. And how do we get to the truth of that? I think by continuing to investigate and continuing to pressure our government to respond effectively.
Right. And I think, you know, data and evidence is the strongest thing we can have. And it's good to see that's still happening. We, at this point, we have third, fourth hand stories that we cannot verify or fact check. I mean, unfortunately, many of the firsthand witnesses are gone at this point. Mm-hmm. So all we really have to rely on is strong witness testimony and the data. And I mean, this reverberated throughout not just your family, Denise, but I mean, so many in the town as well were told to keep silent, were threatened. Mac Brazel, the rancher who found the original debris. I mean, this ruined this guy's life from what I was told. I mean, he became depressed and kind of an alcoholic after that. And like you said, Ben, this has real world effects on the people involved. And I think your show really touches on that human aspect to it as well in bringing in all of the children and once children, I should say, right, Denise? And I mean, it's such a powerful case. And the fact that we can still look at it, I keep saying this, is incredible. So kind of wrapping up specifics of the first episode that I saw, we won't get too deep into it. Again, we want people to figure it out for themselves. But there's also been rumors that there was wreckage possibly stored somewhere else. Someone had their hands on this and it's been hiding for years. I've heard it. Don Schmidt, everyone involved with this case has heard this at one point or another, but nobody has been able to find it. So I have to ask, is this something that you guys are looking into, and what can we expect on the front of possible records still being out there somewhere?
I mean, I personally think that there's, I mean, something came down in the desert, so there's got to be a trail of that stuff somewhere. Somebody's got to have a piece of it somewhere. And I think it's very important that we try to find out where this is and bring it to light and examine it and have it studied.
What do you think, Ben?
First I'd like to kind of pick a bone with Don Schmidt. And I've done this to him to his face, and maybe we'll have this discussion next week at AlienCon. But he makes a lot of editorial assumptions in his research. Somebody knocked on the door and demanded the materials, right? Mac Brazel, Bill Brazel, a number of townspeople who said they had a piece was confiscated by unknown people at the door. And my one point that I would like to raise in this investigation is, well, do we know who they are? They didn't identify themselves. And if this really is a UFO crash, every government in the world is going to want a piece of this. So those with operatives in the United States at the time, and there were, we know that there were in New Mexico, providing information to the Soviets, may have also been impersonating government personnel to get a piece of this. So if we don't have it here, we need to broaden our scope and really challenge, which government might have a piece of this, and do our best to track that down, because it's still an open question. And like, I agree with Denise 100% that there is a piece of this aircraft, or there is a piece of this craft somewhere. And that's a key part of, in kind of solidifying for me personally, in deciding or making my best guess what happens. I'm still in search of that evidence. We have some real good leads at the end of season one, and the journey is not over as far as I'm concerned. But it's convincing, and we give it the due diligence, the rigorous analysis that it deserves.
Awesome. Yeah. And I mean, again, this is that carrot being dangled in front of us for 70 plus years. So, I mean, I guess kind of bringing it to current day, UFOs are kind of in the mainstream like never before. New York Times, Washington Post, various other news outlets around the world are covering this topic in a way they never really have before. You're not hearing the X-Files music played behind news broadcasts or the side-eyed glances and giggles. This is serious stuff. And our Pentagon created a task force to now look into it after being kind of forced in a corner to admit they had been secretly investigating UFOs for, 8+ years within the Pentagon. So I'd love to get your guys' thoughts on that. What does your show on the Roswell case and bringing forth all this new evidence, what does it mean for the world today when it comes to the entire UFO question? And it's kind of how this topic has been perceived throughout the years with a lot of stigma. Whoever wants to jump in with that.
Well, I think it's being more well accepted today because it is more in the mainstream. I think it's just because our national security is involved here too. So I think that we do need to know if we're being monitored or being watched from something that isn't from here, we should know that. And I think that as a citizen of Earth, I want to know if we're being visited. I mean, after all, that is one of the biggest questions we can ask ourselves is, are we alone? I mean, I don't know of a bigger question that we can ask ourselves. And I think that I'm just happy that it is coming out more in the mainstream media. I'm glad that the Pentagon is coming forth with showing us stuff that, yes, that they have been, there was a task force involved in this.
Yeah. Yeah. And again, if all comes to light someday, maybe we'll finally get those lost files on Roswell. But Ben, what do you think about this kind of new world we're living in with the UFO topic? I mean, I was afraid to talk about this with my friends for so many years that I was into this stuff. I lost so many second dates after saying I was a UFO researcher. But things are changing, man. They are changing all over the world with this. So what do you think your show has to contribute to the overall conversation that we're having today about UFOs?
Well, I'm continually surprised by the positive feedback I get from people across all spectrums who are curious about UFOs, who are reasonable, intelligent, educated people who have ideas about what is happening in our skies that I think deserves more credibility and more excitement about, honestly. These are questions that we should be pondering and preparing for. But I think it's exciting. The U.S. government had denied these programs for a long time to come out and say that it is seriously researching and putting together taxpayer dollars to investigate these topics. really will do wonders for the field. But also, I think they should be open to, you know, citizen engagement, right? We see that NASA is doing it now with amateur data scientists sifting through, you know, mountains of terabytes for, you know, exoplanets and anomalies in space to find out. And I think the citizens could be a force multiplier for the Pentagon and for the intelligence community. Probably a lot of bad apples and bad information, white noise, but also in there are some credible sightings, some credible details that could be the key to really figuring out what is that craft in that video, or what did that person see, or why do we have this activity over this certain part of our country. Could do wonders for the moving the research forward.
Right. And I think what kind of sets apart what's happened today from something like Roswell in 47 is the government and the military didn't really know how to deal with this back then. And, you know, it's almost understandable that they would try to keep a lot of it under wraps if they didn't know what it was or what was going on. Whereas today, like you mentioned, we have like citizen astronomers and just people sitting at home sifting, like you said, through data. And that goes for the UFO field as well. Some of the most tenacious people out there are in the shadows, never, you know, they're not on television. They're not on podcasts. They're not in the mainstream media touting things. They're doing hard research and really making headway. And I mean, there's new companies coming out. There's one we just started, the Debrief, where we cover defense and technology. And I mean, we broke a story yesterday about two of the reports that were leaked within the intelligence communities about what they're looking into in the current Pentagon task force. So again, you know, whether I don't know your thoughts on stuff like that, Ben, we were not the ones to find it. It was provided to us by intelligence leaks. That's a whole other story. Kind of, I guess, wrapping that up, Ben, what is it like as a former intelligence officer? What are your colleagues, former colleagues, your friends, your family, what do they think about you now looking at Roswell? I had to ask and put you on the spot about that.
You know, it runs the gamut. Some intelligence colleagues, community IC colleagues are just wondering why, what am I doing? Because it's not on the register of the spectrum of threats that they deal with right now, and to some degree. And others like, hey, run with it, man. You're always weird. Do you. So if the feedback runs the gamut, that was a professional question I had to ask myself, like, what damage am I doing to my credibility by entering this space? And I just thought it's important enough. It's interesting enough. The wonder, the possibility of intelligent life out there was enough to overcome those reservations and just dive right in. You know, this is, I think the field needs a voice like mine to really sift through and make sense of some of what we're seeing on the national security perspective. Can we rule out this event? Maybe it was a training exercise. Legitimately, maybe it's an experimental aircraft, but maybe and possibly it's something else entirely, and we need to really own up to that possibility.
Right, yeah. And, you know, that maybe is what kind of keeps us going. And, I mean, I'll say this, man, we need more people like you in this field because we've kind of fought against people like yourself and vice versa for so long. And I mean, I can't blame either side of that debate, to be honest. It is what it is. But I mean, that transparency within government, I think, is something that's really important for the world right now, especially here in America, you know, where a lot of people don't trust the government. They're not even trusting science. And, you know, we won't get into that sort of debate, but it's hard. It's a challenge. And it's kind of, been gradually happening where we have a mistrust in our government, and things like the Roswell cover-up are reasons for that until we find out why it was covered up. And like you mentioned, there could be very good reasons for that. So kind of wrapping that all up, guys, what can we expect in future episodes of Roswell First Witness? I know we dug into what was going to be in the first one, but anything you could tease for us about what's coming up on the show?
That's dangerous territory. I'll let you take that.
It is. I know. And I don't want to get you guys in trouble.
I just know there's some different people that they've interviewed on for the show. I don't know. There's a gentleman that they interviewed that claimed to have known my grandfather, and were discussing pieces of the material. That was a lead that we followed down. It's very intriguing. I don't want to give anything away about that.
We'll leave it at that. Yeah.
I'll add to that and say that, you know, if there's an important piece of evidence to this story, well, we take a hard look at it and we bring new technology to interrogate it. So you're going to look at some of the established pieces of evidence, whether it's the Raimi photo, whether it's the Marcel, you know, some of the Marcel photos or his interviews. We're going to get as investigative as we can and really look for that evidence in those hidden corners and see if we can learn something new. And we do. I feel like we do. The show really, it really is exciting and it carries it through the end. It's worth watching all the way through the end. And I've been on TV before and I can't say that about other shows even I've been involved in. But this is one that I really feel passionately about. And I think it's going to be successful.
Awesome. I mean, if the first episode was in any indication, I think it really will. It opened my eyes to a lot more ways to look at this case, which is, like I said, so refreshing when it comes to the most famous and controversial case of all time. So I can't wait to see what comes next. And before we give the specifics on the show, this is always an active investigation. Even after the cameras stop rolling, I know, Ben, you're still looking into this. I am, Denise. I know you are as well, because you want answers more than any of us, for your grandfather especially, who deserves that. But is there anywhere that people can reach out or connect with either of you if they have any leads or things to follow up with what you bring forth in the show?
I'm not sure, Ben. What do you think?
I'll have a personal website up. It's not up today, but it will be up soon, a.k.a. Ben Smith. You can find me there if you have any leads. I want to be a contributing partner, voice researcher in this investigation going forward, and any leads would be super helpful. You can always contact the History Channel as well, and they can get a hold of us. And if we convince History Channel, then we can get more money to really investigate these things, which is where a lot of the magic happens. But it's been a trip, regardless. And I think that, like as you mentioned, as you said, this is just for me. This is just the starting point. An entire investigation into the UFO phenomenon and based around, you know, the Roswell incident.
Yep, it all starts at Roswell, and hopefully it'll come full circle sooner than later. But once again, the show is Roswell First Witness. It premieres Saturday, December 12th on the History Channel at 9 p.m. Eastern Standard and Pacific. So everyone, please go check out the show. I can't wait to see what comes next. And Ben and Denise, I have to thank you so much for joining me today on Somewhere in the Skies.
Oh, thank you for having us.
Thank you, Ryan. It was a treat. Real pleasure.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.